Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Sophie Power, who said the women supported FKT for running the head-to-head route across Ireland in just 3 days and 12 hours. Tune in to hear about her passion for reducing barriers for women in sport, as well as the importance of having a strong why, cheesy music, and bad jokes in order to break a 12-year-old record. Thank you, Sophie, so much for coming on the show today. I'm excited to chat with you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I'm hoping to learn from you as well. You've got so many FKTs to your name. I keep looking at them going, this is amazing. So yeah, I'm excited to chat.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So first, let's start with the route itself, because you recently did the head-to-head run across Ireland and said that supported women's time for that. So obviously it's a north-south route across the length of the country. But can you talk about where it starts and ends and maybe the route you took? I know you can make your own choices as to how you go. So a little bit about how far you ran and the elevation gain and how you made those decisions.
So the route is Malinhead to Misenhead, but you can go in either direction. And I think most people go south to north for the wind. Mainly you have that kind of tailwind, but I had to go north to south because I have three kids. And I wanted to drop my three-year-old daughter in the south with the grandparents and essentially run home to her with my 6 and 9-year-olds in the camper van. So that was a real mental kind of imagery, kind of visualization that I'm running home to my daughter. So we went north to south. It's 347 miles, I think 18,000 feet of lots of up and down on Irish road. So it's pretty much all road. And yeah, to set the route, I went to Google and I put Malinhead to Misenhead and then clicked walking. And that's the route. And that's very much been what most people have taken. It's quite an obvious wrong roads. And luckily, most are country roads, but they have a pretty severe camber on them, which I didn't realize. And then a few main roads, but luckily, it's mostly pretty quiet.
And so are these roads dirt? Or are they paved surface?
Paved surface. So it's almost all a car route. So I had a road cyclist with me almost all the way. So it's a driving route. It's a very famous cycling route. There was a bit of trail start, but very, very little. I'd say it was a 99% on roads that cars would go on. Very narrow roads, some of them, that maybe my husband should not have been trying to drive the motorhome along them. But he got stuck a few times as the other man, but mostly just normal roads.
And so you mentioned having a bicycle pacer with you and your husband and two of your children. How many people were on your crew? How did that look? How often did they switch out? What were their roles?
So I had a crew of four. I'd say my husband was in the motorhome with my 6 and 9-year-old. And a lot of the reason for doing it was really for them to see the country. My husband's Irish. The kids haven't spent much time in Ireland. We live in England. And so they were there for an adventure. And my husband was getting some supplies in, but really the kids were playing football in every single Irish village they could do. And my husband's there behind the scenes and helping getting the message out to the support runners. And my sister-in-law, Karen, was super helpful. And so that whole side of the family were doing that. But the people looking after me, I think my husband joined me in the last day because sometimes you need your husband just to, you know, kick you into action. So I had Kate Strong, who's a world record holder endurance cyclist, on the bike for up to 20 hours a day. She's a phenomenal woman. She has her own cycling FKT. And then I had my friends Nick and his wife Letha coordinating the food and everything I needed. And then my friend Phil Hill taking photos and video, and hopefully we're going to make a film out of it. But he got dragged into the crew as well, and he got stuck on the bike at certain times as well. So it was four people working all out for me, and I'm so intensely grateful for what they did. I couldn't have done anything without them, and they were just absolutely phenomenal. Even when I kicked off once because there wasn't enough jam in my jam wrap and I sent it back, I had a lot of tortilla wraps with jam in, and you know, there just wasn't enough jam in that wrap to get it down. It was a bit dry, so I sent that one back. But they were absolutely brilliant. They were just phenomenal crew.
And there's a couple things there I want to talk about, but first let's talk about the jam wraps and the food. What were you eating along the way aside from jam wraps?
So we actually noted it all down. Actually, it's on my Instagram. There's the whole menu. The Precision Hydration needs to buy a lot of gels. I put my whole menu up. So there was a lot of jam wraps. There are like 14 jam wraps in this. Some hummus wraps, a few at a time, banana wraps, mostly jam wraps. I think during the day, I tried to stay on solids. So I also had these fruit and nut blended date bars from Raw Valley, which I love. So those and the wraps during the day. And McDonald's at one point, but it didn't go down very well for the chips. They're great when they're hot, but then you have them 20 minutes later and they're just not so good. And then over the night, that's when my stomach shuts down a bit and I need to go to the gels and the chews, start on the caffeine gels overnight. And then as soon as the morning hits, and then the last day I was kind of verge of kind of heat exhaustion. It was super hot and my body couldn't thermoregulate anymore. And the only thing I could keep down was Coke, the plain gels, and Mr. Whippy. I should say the US version is soft serve ice cream. So the crew are trying to find me soft serve ice cream in the middle of the Irish countryside.
So you mentioned it was really hot. So, okay, my perception of Ireland is definitely not that it's hot. Can you talk a little bit about what the weather was like for you? And was this unusual weather?
So it wasn't hot at the start. It was torrential rain. It was mostly raining for the first 2 days. And I guess when people look at doing an FKT, they look at a window of a few days and start on the best day. But this was our half-term holiday. So the kids only had 1 week holiday from school. And I had to start at 8 o'clock on the Tuesday morning. That would have meant that the record would have been midnight the Friday. And I was hoping to finish a few hours inside that so they could get to bed at a decent time. And then we'll get home 2 days after. So there was no window. It was pouring with rain at the start and I just had to start. And it rained all day and the next day. And then I got the third day was actually pretty nice. And then the heat kicked in and it was the start of the Irish summer and the hottest day of the year. And that made it really difficult. I found it much easier to run in the torrential rain than the heat. I think the issue with the rain was that I couldn't just drop to the side of the road and have a quick nap. I needed to have the van because I knew that if I did, I'd get too cold very quickly and I get super wet. So that restricted me on just being able to take the quick power naps. I had to have the crew around to be able to get into the camper van. But yeah, and I think about Ireland. And I did say to myself, if it didn't rain and it was good weather, then have I really run across Ireland? Have I had the full Irish experience unless I do go through the rain? So at least I can say that Ireland threw everything it had at me and I still got through.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty valid. It doesn't count unless it rained, at least some. You mentioned taking naps on the side of the road. You were out there for 3.5 days. So how much did you sleep during that time? And was there a strategy? Was it pre-planned or was it, I'm tired and I'm going to lay down now?
So my total sleep was 2 hours and 17 minutes in 3 nights. Which I knew I wouldn't be able to get much more than that if I wanted to set the record. It was a very tight record. Mimi Anderson is one of the kind of greatest UK ultra endurance athletes. And I knew it had been a good run for her. And I knew that I would not be able to take proper sleeps if I wanted to have a chance on the record. And in the end, I only broke it by 3.5 hours. And I was slowing down a lot with heat exhaustion. The crew were worried on the last day. So I knew there wasn't much sleep there. My goal was to do longer sleeps, kind of 20 to 30 minutes at the nights and 10-minute power naps when I needed them. But the first night I lie down, I thought I can't sleep. And I guess mostly when I race 24 hours and I don't sleep. So my body was in race mode and didn't want to sleep. So I just gave up and ran. And then the first big sleep was 2 a.m. on the second night. And I was really desperate by then. My body was really shutting down and it was a dangerous part. It was a night and there were 70 mile an hour trucks going past on this stretch of road that was the most dangerous part of the whole thing. So the second and third nights I had 20 or 30 minutes and then lots of 10-minute power naps. When I needed them, Kate would call ahead to the crew and they'd put the mattress down at the side of the road or if it was raining in the van and I'd take a caffeine gel and that takes 10 minutes to kick in. So I'd lie down for 10 minutes with a dry rope on. And 10 minutes, they wake me up and the caffeine gel kicked in and I just head off again. But mostly just by the side of the road. It was just much quicker than getting in the camper van and out.
Wow. I've never heard of that technique of consuming caffeine and then taking the nap. That seems like it makes a lot of sense.
It works. I think you get the double whammy of the caffeine kicks in and you've had that 10-minute nap. It's a 10-minute thing, so you can't do it for a 20-minute nap. But it really worked for me just to have that additional boost to get to my feet and to start running and get moving.
A couple of things in there. You mentioned Mimi. And what I found interesting when I was researching this, the history of running this route. And I was wondering if you could just give a brief little overview of the history of this route and how your effort fits into that.
Yeah, it's an iconic route because it's across the country. And Mimi set the world record, I think, back in 2012. So it's held for a long time. And I think, especially on the male side, a lot of people have tried to take the male record. And it's a difficult one. I think there's an FKT, but not a Guinness World Record on it because of some of the validity of the evidence. But a lot of people try and fail because of the injury risk, because the camber is so tough on those roads that it looks a lot easier on paper than it is. You're running with one leg lower than the other for a lot of it. And the road surface is really broken up. So I think that the women's record was originally 5 and something days. And then Mimi took it down to 3 days and 15 and a half. And I got it down to 3 days and 12. But yeah, I think with better weather, there's definitely room in that record. So I'd be excited if someone wants to go out and have a go, and definitely happy to support them in any way I can.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I was very impressed by when I was looking at the records, the strong female times on this route over the years.
I think it's the caliber that the women that have attempted it are just phenomenal athletes. So it's a bit of an honor to follow in their footsteps and have a go. And Mimi was really supportive, giving away all her tips as well. So that definitely helped me do it.
That's awesome. I love that camaraderie in ultra running and in FKTs.
It's different. I think people often say, do you not want it broken? And I very much view it as I'm holding it for the next person. And it's just something that you'll pass on. And you know, you have that experience of breaking it and then hope that someone else gets that same experience. And hopefully they have as good an experience on the route as I had. I mean, I had the most incredible time with the support that came out, and especially the schools that came out and the kids that came out. And I felt like the whole country was watching my dot and out on their doorsteps cheering on. And I'd love that for someone else.
I have a question about that. So you had mentioned earlier about having somebody on a bike with you, but then you mentioned support runners. Did you have people from the Irish running community just coming out and joining you along the way, like people you didn't know? It sounds like you had people on their front steps cheering you on. How interactive was this? It sounds like your kids were playing with the kids along the way. So what was the community sense of this in the broader scale outside your crew?
I never expected what the support could be like. And I only announced it on social media, I think 10 days before. I kept it really quiet. It was quite a personal challenge. And I wanted to raise awareness for She Races, and I wanted to raise funds for She Races and really kind of inspire women to set a challenge. But I didn't want it to be a big thing before I set off. And the first day was fairly quiet. And then the runners started coming. And the second day, a lot of ultra runners, people joining for kind of 10 plus miles, local community runners. And then we got to Cork. My husband's from Cork, and my sister-in-law, Karen, I told a few people about it. I'd been on an Irish running podcast talking about what I was going to do. And then the runners started coming left, right, and center. It was amazing how many people came out. And then the schools were out, and it was just more and more people. And I think especially on the last day, I was running at kind of a walking pace, so anyone could join. And when I saw someone waiting by the side of the road with running gear on, I knew that I was going to get a new friend for a few miles. And when I didn't have the energy to talk to them anymore, I had these amazing runners that would just chat to each other, and I could listen to that conversation. And that was such a boost. And my sister-in-law came out with her friends as well. And actually my nephew came for a few miles, and it was just wonderful having them and seeing my kids every now and then. And the route went through a town that my father-in-law is from, and a lot of their family from across the country had this mini reunion when I was going through the town, so in Kilmallock, and it was great. And then my daughter surprised me on route. They brought my daughter there so I could get a kiss and a cuddle. And then she was there at the end. And it was all about the people. I think you start off in the journey, and the why was really about inspiring women that weren't there. And then the why became about inspiring all the kids and hearing all the stories of everyone who was dot tracking me, and having a dad come and join me after he's put his daughter to bed. And he told her all about it, and she was really excited. And all these stories kind of, it was so emotional. Every time I ran through a school and they were cheering, I was just bawling tears, like those big, ugly tears. It wasn't about me. Nothing of this was about me. And I think there was never any thought that I wouldn't finish, because this wasn't my run. It meant so much more than me setting a record. It wasn't about the record at all. It was about what it meant for women to go and do this distance, and what that changed the perceptions of what all those girls thought that they could do for themselves and what they thought women were capable of.
That's really incredible and beautiful. And I love how you can start out doing something for yourself or for your own reasons, and then it just completely morphs into something else because of the way that's impacting the people around you.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful, because I guess it was always about, I called it Challenge You, and setting kind of a framework for women to set challenges that were outside their comfort zone, but attainable, that they had a strong why for, and that they get their family and friends to support them. And it was very much all about Challenge You and inspiring women to set challenges. And then it just morphed into kind of a big Irish celebration and something much more that I'm really grateful for, because seeing the videos of the schools is, I mean, I can't watch them. I just keep crying. That really spurred me along and really helped me drive forward and know that I had to get to that finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you tell us a little bit about She Races? I think you're the founder of She Races, and it seems like you did this to promote and to raise funds for that.
Yeah, so She Races. So I guess going back a few years, in 2014, I lost a UTMB place because I was pregnant with my first son. And then in 20, I ran UTMB with a three-month-old baby because they wouldn't defer my place again for pregnancy. And I realized a photo that went pretty much viral around the world of me breastfeeding at the 50-mile point in Courmayeur. And I realized that there are a lot of barriers to women to doing events, to doing races, and started campaigning for pregnancy referrals. The Western states changed pretty quickly and other races changed a lot slower than that. And still we have to fight for a few more. But I realized that there are more barriers in pregnancy deferrals for women, and did a big piece of research, over 2,000 women, to go, what are the barriers to races? What are the barriers? Why do we not have as many women on the start lines of longer events? Women are as equally likely to be runners as men, but they go by on the half marathon and we're a minority. And so work with races to set a simple set of guidelines to allow for equitable participation and getting more women on the start line. So it's things that we all know. It's the T-shirts that fit us, enough toilets, period products, pregnancy deferrals, covering that there's a men's race and a women's race, and there's no winner. But I say the winner is, there's two races in the Olympics. There's a men's 10K and a women's 10K. And covering that equally in the media, so we know that, you know, our race is respected. A lot of it is getting the women on the start line, so looking at the cutoffs and looking at the language that's used and giving more logistical information and imagery that's all women of all shapes and sizes and abilities and colours and ages, and really kind of helping races to do that. So it's a set of guidelines. Races can sign up to them. We want to support races to get more women on the start line. So we want to encourage more women to talk to races and say, this is what could be better. Because I guess for me, I believe in finish lines. I believe finish lines change lives. It's happened to me. I think they give us so much strength throughout the rest of our lives. And at She Races, we support the races, we support the athletes, and a lot of advocacy work to encourage, especially minorities, women and minority groups, to get the start lines and break down those barriers. I'm hugely passionate about it, as you can probably tell. I'm really passionate about it. And it was a way to talk about She Races. And often to get the media coverage, you need a hook. And running across the country on not much sleep is a great hook to be able to talk about my passion project and She Races, the organization, and what we want to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. And I've seen so much of that too, just in the FKT realm. And also I come to FKTs through a long distance hiking background. When I first started out, there were very few women that were solo. And even now, when you get into the longer distance FKTs, there's very few women doing them. And yeah, like, what are these barriers and why do we see that? And what is this breakdown? I think people like you that are going out and doing these things help bring that to the forefront. And I think that that's invaluable for all those little girls that saw you along the way to look and be like, well, there's a woman doing this huge, incredible thing. So I can do that too. I think that's amazing.
I always kind of share my story that you often see these women doing things, these athletes, and you think they've always been athletes. And I mean, I was second last in the mile at school. Like at 14, I was not a runner. I didn't play any sport. I picked up rowing at university just so I could go on dates with men's crews. I was an absolute non-athlete and picked up ultra running by accident when I signed up for the Marathon des Sables, not having run more than that mile. And now I guess I wear a GB vest and I'm a mum of three. And I think that's equally important to me. There's a lot of women that I think miss out on sport, especially in the UK, certainly, that girls drop out of sport alarming rate, even from primary school, the first few grades. I sit as a trustee of a charity, Women in Sports, an insight research charity in advocacy, and we research into why this is. And you find that a lot of women then don't pick up sport in their entire life, and trying to give that inspiration that, you know, it's never too late to start. And we can achieve amazing things if we move our body with purpose. We're an athlete. And I think that's important to share, because you often think it's only the people who are sporty at school that can do these things. And no, I think certainly with ultra marathons, there's a women-only ultra marathon in the UK called the She Ultra, and, you know, 500 women, and 70% was their first ultra, when you put no cutoffs in place. And it's just about, can you hike 30 miles on beautiful trail? You know, so many of us can do that. If you spend all day on your feet anyway, because you're a busy mum. My school run every week is 20 miles up and down trail, just hiking with my kids. That's my school run. That's training. And I think opening our mind as to what's possible, and that you don't have to be a fast 5K runner to complete an ultra marathon. You can hike it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think our sport journey was very similar. I didn't play any sports in school. I didn't do anything athletic till I was in my 20s. I didn't have a lot of interest in sport or role models in sport. But yeah, you can start at any time. And I think that it's really great to know that you don't have to have this from childhood onward.
No, and I guess my kids are having a very different upbringing to the one I have. We live on trail. We're running. My three-year-old daughter is so fast down steep trail, I can barely keep up with her. So I'm grateful they're going to have this upbringing. She's so fast. She's got no fear. She tumbles, she gets up, she runs. And I was like, I'm not running down that. But yeah, I'm grateful that they're going to have a different upbringing. But the kind of more kids that we can inspire to be outside and active, I feel I missed out on kind of decades of being active in sport. And yeah, I don't wish that on any other child.
Right. So what do your kids think about their mom doing these things? Do they have a concept, or are they just like, oh, mom runs? What do they think of it?
Oh, the boys love it. They get it. So I got, the boys are 6 and 9, and this was the best adventure for them. They were so excited. We'd never had a motorhome before. So they got to sleep there, and they got to hang out, and they got to get the witness signatures. So they could stand by the side of the road and go, did you see my mummy run past? Can you sign this thing? They were so much part of it. They were just wonderful to have around. And they know that I'm a bit different from mum at the school gates. And I don't tell people what I do, the level running, but it gets around when there's a few ultra runners. And then they have their teachers asking, like, we saw your mum on TV, we saw your mum do this. They think that's pretty cool. And then they get to take medals and things into assembly, and they like that and talk about things. So yeah, I think they're really inspired by it. I think they don't see men and women any different in our athletic ability. They always ask me if, can men run as far as women can? Can they do that? And because we only watch them in, we only watch women's football. Oh, sorry, your soccer. So you only watch that in the house. And my 9-year-old auntie would do, can boys play football as well as girls? Because these are amazing. Can boys play as well? I was like, no, absolutely not. So I'm not going to say that, but I think they love it. And that's fine. Like, my 9-year-old has no intention of running. He will run after a ball. He'll run after a hockey ball, a tennis ball, a football. But my 6-year-old, I think, for me, I'm juggling my training. Everything is a juggle. There's no afternoon naps. If I'm watching a hockey match, I'm running around the pitch. And what I love is recovery runs. I often put my 6-year-old on his bike and we go for 6 miles and just chat. And so they're very much part of the training. And it would be helpful if they're part of the recovery and let me get a bit more sleep. But I can't have everything.
What has your recovery been like from the FKT across Ireland?
I had no idea what recovery after something like this would be. And it's been, I put some recovery diaries on Instagram on stories and just saved them just because it's been crazy. So I know the recovery from a 24-hour. And I guess I'd done the summer spine race, but that was so much lower intensity because it's such much more hiking. So I get back and I put on weight. I put on 2 pounds and thinking that's a bit strange. And the first night, I woke up every 30 minutes thinking I had to run. And so that got no sleep. The next 2 nights were just swelling and throbbing in my feet and my legs. And then night 4, I dropped 5 pounds in a night, all with night sweats and all that. My body had always said, okay, I don't need to be swollen anymore. 5 pounds that night, 2.5 pounds the next night, just chewing the bed. It was just so disgusting. And it took 3 weeks. I've got a Garmin and I want to monitor the HRV on it. And it took 3 weeks to get a kind of restorative sleep the body was just in shock. And I think it was just the intensity of it being so much ground covered a day versus something that was more hiking. It was 100 mile running a day and over the hills. And yeah, and it's been really tough. I think tough getting back into, I think, the eating unhealthily and just eating everything and then catching up my social life and maybe a few nights out with friends that I've missed. And then I think the motivation, I had a knee injury. I picked up a knee injury 150 miles in. So I ran 200 miles on a swollen knee. And that's taken a while to heal. It's still a bit dodgy. I wish I'd focused on the recovery, but there's so much else. And I've got such a busy life that it was really difficult to do that and prioritize. And I think if I'd had another important event, kind of, I'm running TDS in 2 weeks, but that's just to go around a course and take pictures. And it's only 145K and it's but super hilly. Yeah, I think motivation's not there yet. I think I haven't wanted to go out and train hard and I've just taken this downtime and I don't think that's a bad thing. And then I think in a few weeks, we have time to reset and go, let's get back and see what's next.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of pressure sometimes, external and internal, after you do something big to just jump right back into training and going hard. And it takes a while for the body and the brain to synthesize a huge effort. So I think it's good to take that time and not get out there and go hard until you're ready.
I don't think I am ready. And I thought I'd be ready a lot sooner. I'm training and I'm being active and I love to get the runs in, but there's so much give back I have to do and more time with the kids and more time sorting things out. And She Races has been crazily busy and works me busy. And I think what I've realized in Ireland is when you have a really strong why, you can achieve anything. You can bash through any limits you think you have. If your why is strong enough, you can do the impossible. I don't have a why. I hope I'm going to be selective for GB for the 24-hour World Championships next October. But that's in August. That's October. I've got a few ideas, but it's going to have to take a really strong why to get me to put my body through that again. And maybe it's something shorter. Maybe it's something fun. I don't know. But I also don't think you have that many matches to do things like that. And I'm 42 and I'm aware of the toll that's taken on my body. And if I keep doing these things, I'm just going to get slower and slower and burn out. I want to be running when I'm 70, 80. And so being really aware of what damage that did to my body and that I can't do it too often.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something I think I learned in the last few years. I'm just a little older than you. And there was a period of time where I was just doing big thing after big thing after big thing. And then eventually I burned out and recognizing now I'm like, I have one, maybe two big things in me per year, and that's okay. And just having a good solid why and allowing yourself the in-between time to recover, really, so that there is longevity. So you are able to do this long term.
I think you're right. And I think the pressure is to keep doing it. And I'm so glad I'm not an elite athlete. I'm so glad this isn't my job, because you see them having a racing calendar and they've got to recover as soon as they finished an event and train for the next. And this is just what I love to do. And I'm not sponsored by anyone and I don't have to answer to anyone. And I get to do what I want to do. And I have a phenomenal coach, Edwina Sutton, who, she's got three kids and she's an amazing ultra runner. And she guides me through that, thinking, what are you thinking? What do you want to do? And I've got some long-term injuries I want to rehab properly and tick some boxes and, then prepare for next year. Maybe do the stuff I don't want to do, like running a fast marathon. I've never really run a marathon before, a fast one, but I guess it's a kind of, as the race gets longer, I get relatively quicker and 24 hours isn't that long. And I'm nowhere at the halfway and then I make my way out the field, but I'm still making my way out by the end. So I need to learn how to start a bit quicker. So there's bits and pieces I need to work on to make me a better 24-hour runner. And it's important that, when I wear my country vest, I've trained as hard as I can and as smart as I can. So I think that's possibly what needs to be next and take that a lot more seriously and really focus on that event rather than any kind of crazy ideas and then the year after come up with something else. But I think it's so important to take the time. And I think Simone Biles was asked in an interview, what's next? And she's like, I'm going to babysit my medals. And I think it's right that we do that. And I don't think I've quite reflected as much on it, because maybe this is probably the pinnacle of the running career and the best run I'll ever do. And it'd be sad to move on from it so quickly.
Yeah. Well, to wrap up, I have one last question, a little bit on the more humorous side after that. I saw in your posts that you asked people to send in bad jokes for your run. So I'd like to know, first of all, how that went. And second of all, what the best bad joke was.
So they ran out a lot of the message to me, and I think I was zombified. But my six-year-old has a joke book for six-year-olds, and they're really bad. But the worse they are, the better. So I think his was like, knock, knock. Interrupting cow.
Interrupting cow.
No. It's really bad. It's so bad, but it goes on, and he loves it.
Oh my gosh.
Because he loves it, I love it. But yeah, there are some terrible jokes, but I love a terrible joke. I think I love cheesy music as well. I think most people have their emergency playlist, which is all the songs that you can never admit to listening to. And I tried to only have Irish songs as I ran across Ireland. I thought there's some amazing, obviously Irish music is possibly the best in the world per capita anyway, but there are some really cheesy songs. There's this band called Bewitched that is really, really cheesy teen pop. And yeah, there's quite a lot of that on my playlist.
That's amazing. I love cheesy music and bad jokes. I think that those are great motivators.
Sometimes you just need something to take your mind off it. And I struggle to listen to, I love podcasts for my long runs, but if I'm racing, it's generally just anything that makes me smile, and staying external and chatting to people is my favorite. But, you know, once you need to go in your head, then the cheesy music and just anything that would be a different snack or a different sweet or something. Or especially when we went past the school and the school made 50 different posters with my name on and different variations on You've Got the Power. And then the crew would show me different ones of them. And I could see them as I went. They collected them all up and took them home for me. So yeah, it's the small things I think that give you that big boost that you don't realize. And having the crew that know what to do, how to give you the boost. And my coach sent voice notes that made me cry on the last day that they played out to me. And then she sent me a playlist and put it onto Kate's, my cyclist's phone, and gave me her headphones. And I listened to her playlist that she'd made for me for that part of the route. And yeah, it's the small stuff that keeps you going. I don't think these challenges are physical. I think they're mental. I don't think the strongest person in the world could do it if they didn't have the mental strength. And these little pick-me-ups, they really give fuel to the brain, and then lots of sugar to give fuel to the body.
Right. Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. It was a real pleasure chatting with you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again, Sophie, for coming on the show. You can read about her FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow her adventures on Instagram at ultra_Sophie.